Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @redrock_bball, and it is another of the season preview podcasts, and today we're going to be talking the Houston Rockets. And to talk about the Rockets, I'm joined by one half of Australia's most popular NBA podcast, Benyam Kadane of Believe the Hype. Benyam, how are you going?
I'm doing great. Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
It's very good to have you on. Now, big fan of your show that you and Tom put on. Tom's coming on the show later on in the week, but you guys do a great job. Where can everyone find, your podcast and you on Twitter?
You can find the show in iTunes, just under Believe the Hype, or over at the site at believethehypenba.com. And you can find myself on Twitter at Benyam Kadane, BenyamKidane.
Go ahead and follow Benyam and give the show a subscribe on iTunes. How often a week do you guys record at the moment? You're doing about one or two shows a week?
Yeah, during the off season, we're still trying to keep up with things and sort of go through one show a week and get across all the news. And then during the regular season, we'll be back to around sort of three shows every week.
So go ahead and subscribe to that over on iTunes or wherever you're subscribing to any of your podcasts, on Stitcher, on, I think you guys are on Audio Boom as well. Go ahead and subscribe there. Leave reviews for this show and for Benyam and Tom's show as well. It helps all of us get further up in those all important rankings. Now, Benyam, we're talking Houston Rockets today. They're a team who I think probably surprised people last season, with people often underrating a lot of their guys, sometimes due to the watchability of some of their players, but they were tremendous until the end of the season, which every team's tremendous until they get beaten. But there's more intrigue coming for this team this season with the moves that they made in the offseason. Do you think they got better with what they did this offseason?
Absolutely. I think in terms of talent, the team definitely got better. But I think looking at last season, I think they just ultimately ran out of legs. They were a very tired team and a very injury-riddled team as well, with obviously Beverly and Monty Yunus not being able to contribute at the pointy end of the season. But the moves that they did make, I think bringing Ty Lawson is you know, one of the biggest moves of the offseason. I think it's probably one that I don't think has gotten enough credit in terms of what he can potentially bring to them. But, you know, they were a number two seed last year. They went to the Western Conference Finals, but I think they're looking at a better run this year.
Yeah, look, I think you touched on a couple of important points. The Ty Lawson thing, which we'll cover in a second, but the injuries to Patrick Beverley and Donatas Motiejunas were way more important than what people really took notice of, because Beverley doesn't score, doesn't handle the ball, but he's a spot-up shooter who hits a lot of threes, and he's a tenacious defender that handles so much of that defensive load. And without him, they were forced to play, you know, Jason Terry big minutes, and it's not going to work out all that well. Pablo Prigioni had to play, you know, big minutes, and they did okay at times, but Beverley is a guy that fills his role without people really noticing, and that's a big key to have him back. Adding Ty Lawson and Donatas Motiejunas, who I think is still the best power forward on this team. I think he's a better player than Terrence Jones. He can do a lot more than what Jones does. And he was playing the best ball of his career before he got injured. So having him back just adds to the strength in this front court. And then you hope that Dwight Howard is healthy. That's probably something that we're not going to be able to bank on for 82 games. But they definitely got stronger, even though they lost Josh Smith. But let's talk about Ty Lawson coming across, because he is one of the couple of guys that they added this season. Marcus Thornton's the other one. He's not going to have a huge role, I wouldn't have thought. But Lawson coming across, we know his troubles, the DUIs in Denver. He had issues with the coach, Brian Shaw, over there clashing. And his play dropped off a lot last year, even though he had a lot of double-digit assist games, almost averaged 10 for the season. He wasn't as effective a player. He comes across to Houston now. Let's start. Do you think he starts? Do you think he plays 30 minutes a game? Do you think they run him as a sixth man? How do you see them integrating into their current rotation?
I think if we sort of take away all the off-the-court stuff and just look at in terms of what he'll be able to bring on the court at, you know, the Ty Lawson that we know from even last season and the last couple of years, I think he'll start for this team. I think he's a fantastic ball handler and just a creator of offense. I think that's something they definitely lacked a little bit. Obviously, James Harden is a fantastic player, but really it was just him in terms of creating offense, especially when Patrick Beverley went down, who's not necessarily your traditional point guard. So having a guy to come in next to James Harden who's super quick, super athletic, and can get them into their sets quickly, can just get guys into their spots and get guys open looks as well. I think Ty Lawson is going to be fantastic for this team at the pace that the Rockets play at. And the production that he's able to give them, you know, he can be a 15-10 guy on this team easily, but also just make them more efficient.
Now, last year he was basically a 15-10 guy. He averaged 15 points. He had 9.6 assists. His shooting numbers weren't great. 34 from three, 44 from the field, which is not horrible, but it's not fantastic. But he also played 36 minutes a game. I think he's going to find it hard to get to 36 minutes a night this year because Beverly's there, and Beverly does offer so much to this team in terms of what he's able to do defensively, because Lawson is going to struggle defensively. Harden has had well-publicized defensive struggles, so Beverly is going to have to get on the court at some point to play alongside Harden, because playing Lawson and Harden together for massive stretches of the game defensively could become an issue. So I think that Lawson getting close to those 36 minutes a night is pretty much a pipe dream at this point. Do you think that he gets that, or are they going to cut him back to like a 30-minute a night sort of guy?
I wouldn't be surprised if they sort of went around 30 minutes, given that they have the luxury of having Patrick Beverley on the team, who's a fantastic player. So they can almost, I mean, they almost want to split those minutes up between those two guys to get the best balance of the pair. But I also think as well, given that, you know, he'll probably be the starting point guard, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw a lot of him just actually playing with the second unit, whether that's with the Monty Unis, and just trying to keep that score ticking over, because you can sort of alternate between having James Harden as the primary offensive option with the starting unit, and then have Ty Lawson come in and dictate terms with the second unit with some other guys who aren't necessarily as offensively gifted as the Rocket starter. So I wouldn't be surprised if that maybe sort of slowly crept in towards the latter half of the season.
I think that that's a great point. And I think that's something that he should be doing, is playing with that second unit more, because in the second unit, they can roll out Marcus Thornton at the two. So Thornton's a guy who is a really good three-point shooter. Lawson said he's more of a drive guy, attack the rim sort of guy. He can do that, attack the rim and kick out to Thornton, get him to hit those open threes. Then you've got Corey Brewer on the wing, who brings the defense, who can guard down. If Lawson's overmatched against someone at the point, Brewer can come and defend those guys on the perimeter as well. Gives them a defensive option on the wing. Or even if they run Trevor Ariza there, he's an awesome defender too. So he's got a couple of options to cover him in that way. And then you mentioned that Lawson and Monty Unis running together would be pretty awesome to see, because we know what Monty Unis can do. He's got a very diverse offensive game for a big man in particular. There's not many players that can do what he does from an offensive point of view in the league. And I think Lawson running with those two guys together. So in the end, and this happens with every team, it doesn't matter really who starts. It matters who gets minutes. And I think that Lawson will probably get close to 30. And Beverly's going to get a big chunk of minutes too. And then the scraps are going to go to Jason Terry, who did re-sign with his team after it appeared like he wasn't going to. Thornton, he's had some interesting moments throughout his career. He's had some big times in Sacramento and New Orleans, not a huge amount in Boston. Is he rejuvenated here in Houston? Does he provide a 20-minute role off the bench, or is he just really like, you know, maybe sometimes he gets 5 minutes, maybe sometimes he gets 10 minutes? Is he in that lesser sort of range?
I think the best-case scenario there is you want him to shoot the ball, amongst these sort of lineups. You obviously want to have your big guy, whether it's Monty Unis and Dwight Howard, and use these guys like Ariza and Brewer and Thornton to an extent to space the floor and be reliable three-point threats. So I think the responsibility, I don't think there's a huge expectation for him on this team, but I still think that he could carve out a nice little niche role the way that Corey Brewer sort of has a very specific targeted role on this team. I think the Rockets are a great team at doing that, at giving guys very specific niche jobs, because they have guys that can absorb, you know, so much responsibility, guys like Dwight Howard, guys like James Harden in particular, who can, you know, that's the hallmark of a great player. He can make very average players look really, really good. So I think playing in that kind of situation, it could work out for him, but I wouldn't expect a whole lot from him, minutes-wise at least, just given the amount of players that they do have, because this is very sneakily a very deep team now.
Well, we can run through their roster. We'll do that later on. But there's a lot of guys on this team, and there's no one where you really go, this is yuck. This is like not a good NBA player, because you can go almost 10 deep and go, I can see this guy getting a role. This guy has a role. They've got defined starters, but then they've got their second unit who is full of quality players as well. And they have, despite trading away those four or five guys they traded to get Ty Lawson, they have still managed to get stronger. So the guys they lost throughout the offseason, Benyam, the guys in the Ty Lawson trade, Kostas Papanikolaou, Nick Johnson, Pablo Prigioni, and Joey Dorsey, there's no real loss there. Although Papanikolaou provided some highlights last season and was a very solid veteran off the bench, a decent passing big man. He didn't shoot the ball that well, but he had an okay role off the bench. But I think the acquisition of Lawson offsets that. Is he probably the biggest loss out of those guys?
Yeah, I'd say so. In terms of, I guess, the talent that they lost, he's probably the best player. But I think in terms of the position, that's probably their most stacked position in terms of the front court and the power forward position as well with Jones and Monteunis as well. So I don't necessarily think they'll miss him a whole lot, because once you sort of slide down and look at the threes as well, you have a very accomplished wing combination of Brewer, Ariza, and also KJ McDaniels as well, who didn't get a lot of minutes last season. So I expect him to maybe absorb a little bit of the time left from Papanikolaou. So all in all, they really didn't give up a whole lot to get back a very, very talented player. So it was a fantastic trade, and for both teams as well.
Yeah, exactly. Look, Denver needed to do it. They needed to give the keys to Emmanuel Mudiay, which they have now, and rid themselves of a guy who was creating distractions off the court with his drinking issues and his troubles with the law. They didn't get much back in return, but sometimes not necessarily getting back much in return helps to open up things for the guys you really want to develop. So having Mudiay there with Jameer Nelson to help him along, I think it ends up being maybe probably a win for Houston, but Denver's not going to be too disappointed with that deal. The other guy they left...
Yeah, it's a little... Go ahead. Addition bust and track.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The other guy that Houston lost was Josh Smith, who headed across to the Clippers on a minimum deal. We heard a lot made from him, a lot of comments from him in the offseason about sacrificing for things for his family and his family having to make sacrifices, which a lot was made out of it. Does the loss of Smith impact Houston a huge amount, or do you think they cover that quite comfortably?
I think he was a very valuable contributor to them last season. I think that was because there was a very specific job for him given the injury situation last season. But I think, he probably took a look at the team this season and sort of realized that maybe that job that he had last year wasn't necessarily going to be around for him this season. So I think for him, the opportunity to go and, maybe be the third big guy with the Clippers was a little bit more appealing than being the fourth or, potentially fifth guy in the front court. At least that the Rockets would look to, because I don't necessarily think you'd want to play him ahead of Terrence Jones or Monteunis as well. I think both of those guys maybe fit a little bit better in terms of the play that the Rockets will maybe look at. The shooting was something that is always one of the points when it comes to Josh Smith, that the things he likes to do aren't necessarily the things he's the best at. Whereas in terms of guys like Monteunis and Terrence Jones, you kind of know what you're getting with those guys. And I think the upside is a little bit better, because those guys don't need a whole lot of touches to be effective, especially Jones. He can just kind of work around the basket and get those shots, and Monteunis is pretty good in terms of just getting those sort of post-ups around the 15-feet mark. You run plays for him, whereas for Josh Smith, kind of, he was great in a few moments, but not amazing in a whole heap more.
Yeah, and that's right. I think that a lot of people don't realize how much time Jones missed last season. He had that odd, which we never really knew the exact injury that happened with his leg, where he had that nerve problem, and we heard reports of him not being able to feel his leg for like a month at a time, and he was out for a big stretch, then came back and had a collapsed lung, and that kept him out as well. So his games were obviously limited last season, but he's now back at full strength. Monteunis had the back problem, which cost him the end of the season, and in the end probably cost the Rockets a chance of pushing the Warriors a little bit further, because that was a real big injury for them, because he was contributing significantly down the stretch. He was putting up some really, really big numbers for the Rockets. If we have a look at what he was able to do in the last five games he played before he went out, he was averaging 17 points, 6 rebounds, 1.5 steals, and he was hitting a 3 a game as a power forward as well, and shooting 58% from the field. That was the form that he was rolling into before he went down. So he was a very big loss, but he's back. Jones is back, and that is going to be their front court rotation. Jones, Monteunis, Dwight Howard, with a little bit of Clint Capela thrown in for some good luck, I think, because he was an impressive player in the playoffs as well. We'll get to him in a little bit of time. Actually, we'll get to him right now. Let's talk about guys. I want to look at Dynasty League players, people who are looking at the rookies or the young guys on the Rockets, and let's talk about who they've got on the roster. So from last year's draft, they've got KJ McDaniels, who you touched on a little bit earlier, and Clint Capela. And from this year, Montrezl Harrell and Sam Decker. Out of that quartet of players, who do you think is going to have the biggest impact in the next couple of seasons?
I feel like Sam Decker is an addition to this team, because that's something that the Rockets definitely needed more of, was shooting. And that's really going to be his role in this team, especially because, last year was a little bit deceptive. Trevor Ariza came over as a, I think, around a 43% three-point shooter. And I think he only turned out around 35% last season. So it wasn't the same Trevor Ariza that they had anticipated. But I think bringing a guy that can come in and space the floor with his shooting, especially around these big guys, will be really, really helpful. But KJ McDaniels is the guy I'm really intrigued by, because he was fantastic during the first part of the season with Philadelphia. He played around 50 games, only got on the court for 10 games with the Rockets and didn't see a whole lot of minutes at all. I think he only played about 3 minutes, a game through those 10 games. So he's a guy that I think could replace a lot of what Josh Smith did well. He's an athletic, super quick wing guy who can play both ends, which I think is probably the most important thing. He's the kind of guy that can go out, you know, if given the right amount of minutes, he can go out and get you 10 points, 5 boards, a couple of assists, and definitely a lot of blocks as well.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. And I think the thing that surprised me a little bit with McDaniels is that him heading into restricted free agency this year, I wasn't expecting the Rockets to give him as big a contract as they did, considering they just never used him last season. And they gave him a pretty decent contract. So him playing on that 1 year deal as a second round rookie really paid off for him. So that makes me think that they're going to use him in some way. I just don't see where he's going to get big minutes. He's not going to get them ahead of Ariza, and he's going to play the three. He's not going to get them ahead of Harden, clearly, at the two. Look, he might slip into a backup two role ahead of Marcus Thornton. He would likely get minutes ahead of Sam Decker, although Decker's more likely to play the four. It's going to be hard for him to approach anything that he did at Philadelphia, I think. But as always, if injuries allow him to get into a bigger role, we know what he can do. We know that he can go out there and get those, you know, big block numbers, some decent rebounds. He can get some scoring. He can rebound the ball. He can get some good defensive numbers. But opportunity is severely limited in Houston for him, the way that their roster is currently constructed. I kind of want to talk to you about Benyam. Go ahead.
No, I think that's the big one. It's just the minutes with him. It's where do you slot him in, because you have Ariza and Brewer and Harden occupying those perimeter and wing positions. So it's just a matter of trying to squeeze him in that will determine, I guess, his value this season. But I think the talent's definitely there.
Oh, the talent is there. There's pretty much no doubt about that. But, yeah, it's just you're going to need something to happen to the guys ahead of him for him to actually look. He could overtake Brewer, because Brewer is an older player, but they just re-signed Brewer as well. So they've obviously got some plans to use Brewer at, you know, that backup wing role and defender. And a guy who sometimes gets hot and hits threes out of nowhere, that sort of style that Brewer does. The unpredictability of Corey Brewer. He's probably the most unpredictable guy in the league in terms of what sort of stat line is he going to put out. One night he'll have six steals, the next night he'll have six threes, and he'll score 50 points. And you never know what you're going to get, and you can't ever bank on him doing anything, really, because, well, apart from steals, he's a pretty good guy at getting steals. But apart from that, he's sort of all over the place. Clint Capela, though, is an interesting guy because he really started to break out in the playoffs last season. Dwight Howard is not a beacon of health. Capela showed that he can be. He's very thin. He's very. He's easily pushed around, but his shot blocking and his defensive abilities were fantastic. And I wouldn't be surprised if he gets into a bigger role this year. And if Howard has to miss time, which has been the case over the last few years, Capela could get himself into a role where he's playing 15 minutes a night, and he's a guy that could block two shots in 20 minutes. We saw John Henson block two shots a game last season in 18 minutes. If Capela was in a role where he's getting 20 minutes, there's no doubt in my mind that he could be a guy who blocks two shots. Now, let's hope he shoots better than the 12% from the free throw line that he shot last season. But what did you make of seeing Capela in the playoffs? Were you impressed? Were you surprised?
I guess a little surprised, given that we hadn't really seen much of him at all through the regular season. But I think that's the promising thing, is that the Rockets didn't hesitate to put him in, you know, when they needed him. Obviously injuries definitely dictated that, but it wasn't a situation where they were worried about him. They were just like, you know what, this guy's put in the work, and he did well. He obviously didn't shoot great from the free throw line, but in terms of having a defensive player, the Rockets don't really have another rim protector. Monta Yunus is a big guy, 7 feet, 255, but he's not a particularly good defender in terms of being a shot blocking kind of guy. And Terrence Jones as well, a little bit undersized, 6'9", playing the power forward. So in terms of backing up Dwight Howard defensively, I think he's a great option for them. He's a long, athletic, young guy who I think they'll maybe use in spells to even just give Dwight Howard a rest through the regular season. Because I think when you sort of get to this point, as the Rockets are looking to contend, you kind of have one eye on the playoffs and how you're going to come together, I guess, physically with this team and try and make sure that everyone is healthy. You don't want to run yourself into the ground through the regular season. So I think that's where we might try and see some of these younger guys like a McDaniels and especially a Capela get a little bit more minutes than we may have originally thought.
Now, he only played 7.5 minutes a game in the playoffs, but he blocked half a shot in that time. But where he really sort of came to the fore is, if you look at his advanced numbers, he had a PER of 21.8 in the playoffs. He got his free throw percentage up to 52 after being a guy who shot, if I get the exact number, he has 17% in the regular season from the free throw line. So he shot 52 in the playoffs. not a huge amount of attempts, but it's still a much better result from him there. His defensive win shares were not win shares, his defensive box score plus minus was up at 3.6, which is a pretty decent number, and he was useful, and he was important out there for them. Now, I think that if Howard does go down, Motiejunas probably slides in and becomes the starting center, and Jones is then, you know, definitely gets the bulk of the minutes at the four, but Capella can ease in and can be a guy in a fantasy league when you're looking, I need a block, I need two blocks, who's available? Let's try and get Capella in if he's getting 18 minutes, because we could get some blocks from him, because that's basically his main strength at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think as well, he's the kind of guy that you maybe look at a young DeAndre Jordan, not necessarily comparing the two, but just the way that they were used, and that a guy that you don't have to run any plays for. He can just scrap around the rim, get some tip back dunks, some easy sort of offensive glass work as well. And then also the defensive side of the floor as well, get those blocks. So he's the kind of guy that can be very efficient as well. As you said, the PER was quite good for him with those numbers. So I think in terms of getting a guy that you can maybe take a flyer on if you need some blocks, I think he's a guy that's worth the risk.
Yeah, there's definitely something there to keep an eye on depending on how the situation plays out. What about Montrezl Harrell? Were you surprised that he slipped to the second round? And how do you view him as a player?
Yeah, a little bit. I thought he was going to go a bit higher, but in terms of what he could do for the Rockets, he's a big, strong guy at 6'8", can play multiple positions, and rebound the ball really well. And that's something that I think the Rockets definitely struggled with, especially when Dwight Howard was injured last year. They were a very, very bad rebounding team, and they gave up quite a lot of second-chance points. So I think that's the kind of guy that they might try and, you know, mold around a Kenneth Faried, try and get an energy guy who can run the floor. You know, he's got very, you know, young legs, and at 6'8", he's not a small guy either. So he can, I guess, physically work inside a little bit as well at the power forward position. But I think that's what they're going to try and get from him, is to play defense, block shots, and run the court. And I think the big thing with rookies is you don't want to put a lot of pressure on them, especially in a team that's in a contending situation, because you don't necessarily know what their output is going to be like. But I think the Rockets will be looking to him to try and just add a little bit more in terms of their depth, because they have a deep bench, but I think there's still a lot of those places in the rotation that are up for grabs.
Yeah, look, that energy role is perfect for him. 8 minutes or so off the bench, come in, hustle, alley-oops, power dunks, some blocks, some big rebounds, and then sit down and just do it at 100% energy the whole time, and then go sit down for the rest of the night. And that's exactly what he's going to be able to bring. And I agree. I think he was a bit of a steal slipping to that point in the second round. I thought that he was going to go in that 20 to 30 range of the draft, but he slipped into that second round. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out for him. But I think that the other thing about the Rockets is Jones and Montiejunas are both restricted free agents after this season. So it's unlikely that both of them stick around. They both might stick around, but I think it's unlikely that, because they're both going to demand big money, I'm pretty sure, with the cap going up. They're going to get very big contracts, and the Rockets aren't going to be able to pay both. Who do you think they're paying out of those two?
Yeah, that's the interesting one, because they're both probably around that $10 to $12 million a year mark, which sounds crazy, but given the cap, obviously, that's quite reasonable now. But They definitely want to keep cap room available for summer, because they're one of the teams that's going to have a look at Kevin Durant, obviously. And just, this is the summer where everyone's going to have cap space, and you don't want to limit your flexibility that early. They don't have to extend any of these guys. They'll let them hit restricted free agency and then survey the landscape then. And I think they're probably better suited. I mean, I'm a big fan of Montiejunas. I think his upside is definitely a lot higher than Terrence Jones, especially offensively. I don't necessarily know what Terrence Jones is as an offensive player, whereas Montiejunas, you know what his skill set is. He's a great post-up player, can turn over both shoulders, has that nice hook shot, has a jump shot as well, and as you said, was starting to develop a little bit of a three-point shot. I think he shot around 36% last year on just under two attempts a game. So in terms of where the NBA is going and what you kind of want out of your big guys, I like the role that Montiejunas plays. And especially with that kind of money, I think on this team, I'd probably look at him as more of a long-term option than Terrence Jones.
I 100% agree with that. I'm big into Montiejunas' camp. I think that even if he plays off the bench, he's the better player. But you touched on there him developing a three-point shot, and he shot actually 37% from three last season. But the key thing is, the last 3 months of the season, he shot 44% from three. So he really struggled early on. But, you know, over the last 32 games that he played, he shot it at 44%. And that's, it's not on many attempts, but it's on over two attempts a game. And 44% is a huge number for anybody, let alone a guy who's you know, approaching 7 foot tall. It's a huge weapon. Terrence Jones can hit a three as well, but not to this sort of level. He's not as offensively polished. I think that Mateunis is the better player now, and I think he will be the better player in the future. Still don't think that he's probably going to start this year, but I've said this all along, Benjamin, is I don't think Houston loves Jones. I don't think that they're enamored with him. I think that they've always limited his minutes. They've always looked to upgrade the position. In previous off seasons, we saw that them trying to get Chris Bosh in there. They've been doing lots of things and not really running with Jones. I can't remember who it was 2 years ago. They refused to start Terrence Jones. They put someone else out there who was just not a good player. I can't remember who it was who was starting over him for big chunks. But now that Mateunis has come along, I think that Jones is, look, he could be a candidate to be traded at the trade deadline if they want to get something from him, but I don't think he'll be there past this season.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, took a flyer on a Markieff Morris and tried to add Terrence Jones into a deal to maybe try and get him, because I think he definitely fits a little bit more in with their style of play than Terrence Jones. I think Terrence Jones just kind of excelled at the right time when Dwight Howard was out. He kind of gave him a little bit of a stabilizing figure in the front court, and that kind of, I think, left him in pretty good stead with the Rockets front office, and that kind of looked very favorably for him. But I think in terms of the blueprint of what the Rockets are running right now and what they want to run long term, I think they like that little bit more of a guy who can handle the ball, can shoot the ball as well, and just stretch the floor at the four position, because I think that's definitely a guy you want next to Dwight Howard is someone like Demo who can do all of those things, and Terrence Jones can only do a handful of those things.
I think that the thing that some people, especially a lot of the listeners to this podcast and people playing fantasy basketball, don't understand, because it sounds terrible, but Terrence Jones puts up great fantasy stats, like fantastic. He goes out there and he'll have nights with three blocks and four blocks, and he goes out and has 18 and 12 with four blocks and a three, and people go, look at Terrence Jones' numbers. They're great fantasy numbers, but his numbers overshadow what he's able to do as a player. Not overshadow, they mask his deficiencies as a player. Whereas Mateunis' stats might not look as good as Terrence Jones, but overall as a player, he's a better option. So that's why, you know, fantasy owners will want Terrence Jones out there. I want Terrence Jones to play him 32, 33 minutes, get him those big numbers. But in the end, it doesn't help Houston. So that's where he's going to be limited in that sort of sense. Because the next section we're going to talk about, Benjamin, we're talking about guys who are breakout candidates, you know, players who go from being a good player to being a great player, or an irrelevant to a decent role player, or any sort of definition you want to give to it. I've got Mateunis as my guy who's going to take another step forward based on the way he finished last season before the injury. Who do you have as your breakout player?
Well, I mean, I think Mateunis is the guy, but I also think Patrick Beverley as well, coming back from injury, will be another guy to look forward to as well. Him as a point guard that's mainly used as a spot-up shooter, I think he's going to get a lot of good looks at the basket, especially with Ty Lawson as well. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw stretches where both of those guys played in the backcourt together as just an offensive and defensive tandem. And I think that's one thing that Patrick Beverley has definitely gotten a lot better at, is his three-point shooting. But also defensively, you're going to get a guy that's going to try and get a lot of steals as well. So he's a good player in terms of both ends of the floor, and not necessarily in huge amounts of minutes. I think he can still be very productive. But so Mateunis is definitely, I think, the guy to look out for. But for Patrick Beverley, I think this move to get Ty Lawson, whilst it might look like he's going to take a lot of the minutes, I think it might actually work out pretty well for him.
I would agree with that. I think Beverley's definitely an underrated player, because you look at him and people look at guy's stats and they go, Patrick Beverley's not averaging 10 points a game. What kind of an NBA starter point guard is him? He's terrible, but it's not his job. He doesn't need to score, but he goes out there and he's going to hit 1.5 to 2 threes a game. He's going to do that fairly efficiently, and he's going to be a key guy defensively. And I think the other thing that the other impact Beverley has, especially for fantasy leagues, is if the point guard on your team is playing against Houston and he's got to go up against Patrick Beverley, that's going to be an impact. He is going to get hassled. He's going to get, not shut down, but he's going to see a dip in pretty much all of his statistics, because Beverley is not necessarily like no other, but there's not many point guards who defend the way that he does. So if your guy is going up against Patrick Beverley and you're making a decision, do I want this guy in my lineup? If they're going against the Rockets, you generally want to pull that back, because Beverley on someone can increase their turnovers, decrease their efficiency, their shooting numbers will drop, and a lot of the time they just want to get the ball out of their hands. I remember seeing a preseason game 2 years ago when Jeremy Lin was in Houston, and they started Beverley in the preseason game. They were taking on the Pelicans, who were the Hornets then, and Drew Holiday was he basically just had to say, I'm sitting out the rest of this game, because Beverly just took him full court the whole game, and he had about 6 turnovers in the first half, just got the ball out of his hand at every opportunity, and that's what it's like playing against Patrick Beverly. So I think it's a really good choice, because he is someone who, and look, he's only a young guy. He hasn't been around that long. He was an undrafted player. He's had to work really hard. There is a lot to like about Patrick Beverly.
Look, he was Delhi before Delhi was Delhi. He's the ultimate hustler. He's a very annoying player. And we saw that in the playoffs, I guess the season before last against the Blazers, and also during the regular season. He had Damian Lillard in fits practically through that whole series. And also Steph Curry as well is another guy who he has definitely bothered in the past. And I think especially in the Western Conference, when you have so many talented point guards night in, night out, he's the kind of guy that the Rockets will definitely look to try and obstruct a lot of these guards, because he frustrates players to no end. He's a very tenacious defender, but he can also get you on the offensive end as well with his shooting.
He puts them basically into a situation where they want to get the ball out of their hands, and they're going to rush and make mistakes, and that can be key to those other guys who then can snaffle those steals, like a Trevor Ariza, like Corey Brewer, like James Harden, who can then pounce on those loose balls or errant passes, and that's the key to what Beverly can do. Let's talk sleeper players now, Benyam. So guys who we think that we have a look at where they're being drafted currently in fantasy leagues, guys that are going to outstrip that ranking, who are going to be value if they're picked at that spot. A guy that I really like here is Dwight Howard. We've mentioned him a couple of times. And he had a lot of injury problems, but he's currently being drafted at pick 59 across on Yahoo leagues. This is a big distinction, though. If you're playing in a head-to-head league, that is a bargain at pick 59. If you're playing in a rotisserie league, it is a horrible pick, and that would be my bust. Do not pick Dwight Howard in a roto league at all, let alone at pick 59. But in a head-to-head league, you're probably going to get top 30 value out of him, because he still does what he can do well. His rebounding has come down, his shot blocking has come down, his scoring has come down, but he still does them at a pretty high rate. He still shoots the ball well. He gets, dunk and do putbacks. I hate saying that, because field goal percentage incorporates shooting. So you say they shoot, but he doesn't shoot anything. It's like Jahlil Okafor is going to shoot a high field goal percentage, but he's not going to take a single shot, basically. It's going to be layups and dunks and putbacks and alley-oops. He's not going to take an actual shot where he's got to have shooting form, and that's the same for Dwight Howard. But he still does those things quite well. So I think that Howard's a guy that if you're picking him after pick 50, where the draft position is suggesting that people are, I think that's a tremendous value pick in head-to-head leagues. Is there anyone that you think is looking to outstrip their sort of predicted value?
I think Trevor Ariza is a guy that I think might fly under the radar a little bit. He's not a very sexy player. He's not a flashy name by any means, but he's a guy that can shoot the ball really, really well. And I think another year with this team as well, I think that was probably one thing that we sort of saw last season coming into the Rockets. He didn't shoot the ball as well as we know he can. So I think another year with the Rockets, maybe people are a little bit down on him from last season. So I think that might still be fresh in people's minds. But I think coming into this season, he's going to be really good. I think that definitely makes a big difference. You don't often see guys come in and make that sort of same contribution once they go to a new side. So I'm looking for him to maybe try and get back up to a similar level of production to what we saw in Washington the season prior.
Well, people were really down on what Trevor Ariza was doing last season. And a lot of that is due to the fact that the first thing that people look at, Benjamin, is points. And he went down from 14.5 points to 12.5 points, which is a 2-point drop-off. And his field goal percentage dropped from 46 down to 40, and that's big. But he actually hit more threes a game, which is basically what he's brought in to do. And he got more steals a game, which is the other thing that he's brought in to do. So he was almost at 2 steals a game, and he was at 2.5 threes a game, which are both up on what he was able to do in Washington. So for what he was brought in to do, and that's be a 3-and-D guy, he was better at it. And you mentioned this earlier in the show, is Houston brings guys in for specific jobs and gets them to do those specific jobs. And I think they would have been absolutely wrapped with him doing those specific jobs, that what he needed to do. Perimeter defense, forcing turnovers, hitting threes, and he did it all better than what he'd done the season before. So yes, he was a disappointment, but I think that they internally would have been extremely wrapped with what he was able to do. Plus, he played 36 minutes a game and played every single game, and that's something that can't be overlooked either.
And the other thing as well is with shooters, you need to look at how they're playing with big men and also with point guards as well. And that was two areas where the Rockets struggled with last season, obviously with injuries to Beverly and Monty Unis. Whereas now you have the full deck of players, and you're adding a guy like Ty Lawson, who can create so many open looks. His penetration, his dribble drive moves are fantastic. So I think there's going to be a lot more open shots for Trevor Ariza. So as you said, he was shooting the ball, shooting threes, I guess, relatively well last season, but that was really without the help of a true pass first point guard, and also having the full suite of big men, for defenses to collapse on. So bringing, Monty Yunus back in, Ty Lawson, I think, is going to really open up the floor for a guy like Trevor Ariza. So I think he's one to definitely keep an eye on.
His average draft position is currently sitting at 53. I think that's probably about right, but you're right. He could be a guy who's a top 30 player. If those points go back up to 14 or 15 a night, and then he's still hitting the threes and getting the steals and getting his six rebounds, there's a lot of value in what Trevor Ariza is able to do. What about the other side, Benjamin? I mentioned that Dwight Howard, for me, in a rotisserie league, is a horrible pick. Ty Lawson is also getting picked way too high, in my opinion. His average draft position is 41. I've got him ranked currently outside the top 100, just because I think he's going to lose 6 minutes a night, and that is going to... Look, the numbers from last year, you know, 10 assists is great, but if you're losing 6 minutes a night, that's almost 20% of your playing time from the year before. Your stats are going to come down as well. They have to come down in that amount of minutes, and he's not going to get 10 assists a night. He's not going to score what he did before. He's not going to get any of those numbers. They're going to drop. So I think picking him inside the top 50 is it's not a smart move at this point, unless we see that they're going to go, you know what, Beverly play 17 minutes and Lawson play 34. I just can't see that as being a realistic option for the Rockets. Who do you see as being a guy who's probably labeled a little bit high at the moment? Benjamin. I think we've lost Benjamin there. Oh, and he's back. You're back.
Yep. Back on deck. I think there's something in that, because every trade looks great on paper.
Yep.
We don't actually know how Ty Lawson's going to play with this team, but it's interesting because I think the fit does make sense. We don't necessarily know what Kevin McHale has planned in terms of dividing up the minutes, but and there's obviously you can't ignore the off court stuff as well. So there's a lot of spinning plates with Ty Lawson. So you obviously look at all the positives and the best case scenario, but I think there's definitely a few red flags, even just on the court as well. Just because we don't necessarily know how he's going to play next to James Harden, who's a guy who has the ball in his hands a ton. He has the ball all the time. So that was really what he was brought in to do during the playoffs, because we saw that was ultimately the downfall of the Rockets, that they didn't have another guy they could go to handle the ball. So how exactly that falls out will be very interesting through the regular season. I think we might maybe see Ty Lawson's true benefit to this team in the playoffs, but over the course of an 82-game season, it could just be a case of, you know, we let James Harden go to work again.
Who do you think has more assists this season, Harden or Lawson?
I'd have to say Ty Lawson, given what I think will happen. Just that's such an instinctive part of his game. And I think for James Harden, ideally that there could be more situations where he becomes a little bit more of a spot-up player and energy on the offensive side of the floor. I think that's something we definitely saw happen last season. He was very, very out of gas. So I think there's going to be maybe more situations where he doesn't have the ball in his hands than we saw last season. So I'm going to still go with Ty Lawson, because that's much more what he's hardwired to do.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think that Harden's definitely going to get a bit of a drop in his assist. I still think that he is going to be a guy who gets more than Lawson, basically because I think that he'll play those extra 5 to 6 minutes that Lawson won't. But it will be quite close in terms of what they do with their assist numbers this season.
Yeah, I think you could see James Harden average around 6-7 assists, and then for me, Ty Lawson, I think if he's given the minutes, he can sleepwalk his way to 8 or 9 assists.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. If he gets those minutes, there's no doubt he gets over 8 assists. But to me, I think that the assist numbers get limited by the minutes, and he's down probably under 7 at this point. Let's talk about a guy, Benjamin, who's in a situation where he's limited by his playing time. So if he was able to get those big minutes, he would become a really excellent fantasy guy, an excellent guy in putting up stats. Who's the guy on this roster? It might be someone we've talked about already, someone we haven't spoken about. Who do you think is just waiting for those minutes to open up for him to become a great stat producer? Benjamin.
Spoke about him a little bit earlier in the show, and that's KJ McDaniels.
Okay.
He's a guy that barely played last season. As I said, he only played 10 games for the Rockets last season. I think if he gets on the court, he's able to be a very, productive guy on both ends of the floor, especially with the way that the Rockets play. They play a very up-tempo, very quick game. They shoot a lot of threes. He's not a fantastic shooter, but he's the kind of guy that could sort of go after a very similar role to Corey Brewer, can get on the end of those outlet passes, can track back, can be a very productive defender. But the problem with him is he just doesn't play. But as you said, they have given him that contract. They have looked to maybe put a little bit more faith in him. So I think if he does get on the floor more than last season, which I think is almost guaranteed given that we never saw him last year, I think he's the kind of guy that is definitely just been restricted by his minutes. I think him as a player on this team could definitely be very, very productive. But we just don't know because we haven't seen him play for the Rockets, really.
That's right. We barely, he was missing in action completely since he was over there. We don't know what we're going to see from him, but that's a good point because we saw what he did in Philadelphia. We saw when he was able to get minutes in excess of 20 a game that he'd put up pretty good numbers and be a useful guy and an exciting guy as well. The guy that I wanted to mention was Clint Capela, who I did talk about before. I think that if he was put into a big role, which is probably unlikely given the other guys in front of him, Martinez, Howard, and Jones, he could put up some numbers. Now, his per 36 projections I've got for this season is sitting at like 10 and 15 with three blocks. And he's not going to get 36 minutes a night. But if some reason he was thrust into a 27-minute night a role, there's a lot there to like. But it's probably not likely to happen. But he's someone that I do like for ability to get those fantasy numbers. Maybe in the next couple of seasons, if everything breaks right for him and if they show the confidence they showed in him throughout the playoffs, and you have to think that they, and everything I've heard says they really like what they saw from him, and they really, really liked him drafting him last year, and they were really happy with what he showed. And, trading away Joey Dorsey opened up even more minutes for him. Not that Joey Dorsey's any good at all, but he was another big man that was in that rotation. Moved him away. Capella's going to move into that third center sort of role, and if things open up, you're going to get some big block numbers and some very big rebound numbers from him as well.
Yeah, there's no reason he can't be a 15 to 20 minute a night guy on this team this season.
That's right. Anyone else we haven't really covered on this team? We haven't really talked James Harden. I think we have to talk a bit of James Harden because he was amazing last season. He was close to the number one fantasy player. He was close to the MVP. Just curious, Benjamin, did you think that he should have been the MVP or Steph or someone else?
Well, James Harden was my pick for MVP last season, just given the monumental task that he was faced with in getting the Rockets to where they were at. Because, I mean, no taking away from Steph Curry, he had a fantastic season, very deserving of the award. But for, I guess, just personal preference, I like the task that James Harden took on last season because he did a little bit of everything. He was the ball handler. He was the number one scorer. He was the assist man. He was right up there with rebounding as well, shot three. He basically did everything for that Rockets team and really willed them to victory. And although the aesthetics may not be there with the head fakes and the free throw shooting, I like that. So it's a by any means necessary with James Harden.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had James Harden as my MVP last season just because of everything he said. He did everything. And if you look at his stat line from last season, it's pretty incredible. 27.5 points. He hit 2.5 threes, had 5.5 rebounds, 7 assists and 2 steals a game. And he also blocked 0.7 shots a game, which is, it's pretty incredible for a guy who is disinterested in defense is what he was to actually go in there and block. And there was a big chunk of the season where he was averaging over a block a game, which is, you couldn't have predicted that at the start of the season, that he was going to be a guy so invested or so much more invested on defense. And let's not get carried away because he didn't become Patrick Beverley. He didn't become Kawhi Leonard. He went from being absolutely putrid to being average. But that's a big jump. To move from disgusting to being okay is a big jump for someone like that. You can't expect him to become Scottie Pippen or Michael Jordan defensively. But defensive numbers were fantastic. I think that he is going to be either the number two or number three fantasy guy this year. So if you're picking in the top three, you're either going to get him, Anthony Davis, or Steph Curry, and you can't complain about any of them. If you took Harden at two ahead of Davis or ahead of Curry, I couldn't complain because the numbers are fantastic. The assists probably will drop this year, as we touched on with Ty Lawson, but everything else is pretty incredible. The only problem with James Harden is just watching him sometimes can get a little bit frustrating with all those free throws, but you can't knock someone for not gaming the system, but doing everything it takes to get your team to win, and that's exactly what he does.
In terms of guys that can stuff the stat sheet, as a mouthful, it's him and Anthony Davis. They're the two guys that can get you the, pretty much all, they can get you five in all five categories there. Yep. But for James Harden, I think it's defensively, it's 20% skill, 80% effort with him, because it's not like he doesn't have the tools to be a great defender. He has exceptional footwork, as we see on the offensive end of the floor. He has, a big wingspan. He's a he's an athletic guy. He can play defense. I think it's last season we maybe saw him almost, which it sounds stupid, but he kind of realized that defense from a guy who gets to the line a lot, plays in transition really, really well. And I think he kind of exploited that a little bit last season more so than we've seen from him in years prior. So whether he takes that to another level, which I definitely think he will this season, I think it's more of an effort thing with him on defense. And to his credit, last season, he actually wasn't that bad defensively. He showed a commitment to playing defense in both the system and also just individually as well in staying with his man. There's obviously still enough highlights of him, you know, sagging off a little bit, but I think it's not as bad as we maybe had made it out to be once those YouTube clips started doing the rounds.
We actually saw more YouTube clips of other guys having defensive failings, like the Otto Porter falling asleep sort of clip, than what we had of James Harden last season. Whereas Harden the year before, he had owned that category. It was him all the way. There was no one else really in that category. Otto Porter definitely took it off him last season and actually left Harden to be sort of left alone in that sort of degree. And there's no doubt that those sort of things got to him. And it bothered him. I've heard reports that he saw those things and it pissed him off, basically. And that was part of the genesis of him trying, which sounds stupid for a guy who's an NBA player that he's going to start trying, but he wasn't trying. He wasn't concentrating. He wasn't focused. And then he started to get focused because he didn't like being embarrassed like that. As good as he is as a scorer and an offensive guy, it was embarrassing. It'd be embarrassing for anyone to do that in their job and just be out there basically looking at their shoes while someone ran past them. And that was a big factor. So let's hope it changes for other guys. If someone else, there's something that someone else does that you don't like, let's just make YouTube clips about it. It's all about mixtapes.
I think that's the big thing. Defensive lapses, I think, should only be caught on vines. You shouldn't be able to get YouTube clips together.
Well, not even, Otto Porter, not 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you get a 6-second video, that's okay. You shouldn't be able to fit together an entire highlight reel of defensive lapses. But as you said, I think it was not necessarily a lack of focus on the defensive side of the floor. I think it was just he was so invested offensively. That was really all he cared about, was scoring points. And I think it just kind of was one of those things where the more buckets he tried to get, and almost had to get, because offensively he was really it for the Houston Rockets, that it kind of just became about conserving energy for the offensive end, with, I guess, just kind of makes defense the innocent victim in all this. But I'm pretty confident that'll turn around this season, because we've seen that he's capable of doing it. And I think something, as you said, he was getting clowned on by the internet, by Twitter, by other NBA players. So it's something that I think definitely struck a nerve with him.
I think that something that was really important with it is that we heard the reports before Paul George had the broken leg, is that Team USA camp in Vegas, those two would just go at each other one-on-one in the gym after practice, and Harden was shadowing him. He wouldn't let George get to the rim. And you heard these reports coming out that Harden is shutting down Paul George one-on-one. And people are going, come on, let's be serious. This is James Harden we're talking about. He's going to let him go down the end and shoot. But it wasn't. He was getting in there and getting in his face, and they were saying, this is a different James Harden. And it actually translated. And it comes back to a lot of that stuff that we hear about, you know, Team USA camp changing guys and bringing on bigger performances, like Klay Thompson. DeMarcus Cousins took his game up, and James Harden took his game up defensively. And it was, sometimes you hear these reports come out in preseason and you put them in your mind, that doesn't mean anything, but sometimes they can mean a little bit of something. So Harden definitely improved based on what he was able to work on in the offseason. And the advanced metrics on his defensive numbers, now they don't capture everything, but his defensive win shares went from 2.7 up to 4.2, significant jump. And his defensive box score plus minus went from, he was a negative in that category in 2013-14, negative 0.5, and took it up to a 1. And that's, you know, negative 0.5 to 1 sounds small, but it's triple the amount, basically. It's three times the contribution in that category. So that's a really, really big jump from James Harden. I think we've talked about James Harden's defense enough to fill a whole season, to fill a whole 10-minute YouTube clip.
Before we move along, yeah, though, I think just a great point you made was about that USA experience. I think there's definitely a lot more value in that I think maybe people do give credit for, because you look at the guys who, I guess, quote unquote, not necessarily broke out, but had amazing seasons. It was DeMarcus Cousins, yeah, Anthony Davis, Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden. Those were the guys that were the backbone of that USA FIBA gold medal team. And James Harden was the backbone of those five guys. He was the leader on that team, especially when a lot of the older guys had pulled out. He was the go-to guy on that team. I think the leadership element as well, and the responsibility of that USA experience definitely translated for the Rockets, because I think it kind of dawned on him that whilst he was the franchise guy with the $80 million contract in Houston, he wasn't necessarily accepting all of the responsibility that went along with that. I think that USA experience definitely went a long way to him kind of, you know, just the light bulb kind of went off for him, and it was, okay, I need to play both sides of the ball because I can and I'm good at it, and more importantly, I have to.
You can say the same thing for Kenneth Reed. Maybe he's the exception to the rule with the USA camp, because he was disgusting last season. But USA camp USA camp this year, Benyam, a guy that, you know, we're heading on from that theme, nothing to do with the Rockets, but Victor Oladipo is the guy who has stood out so far at USA camp. A couple of weeks back, he was getting a lot of people talking. I already thought before that he was in line for a huge season, and that only solidifies that he is going to put himself into all-star consideration this season. I think that Oladipo is going to be a big breakout player based on that and numerous other factors. So just sort of throw that in, considering we're talking USA basketball.
I agree. I really like Victor Oladipo as a player. He's a two-way guy, but he's developing really nicely offensively, in that I think the best case scenario for him is not that he'll, I guess, reach these heights, but to model his game after someone like a Dwayne Wade, who can really take advantage of his athleticism and his size as well. At the two guard position, I think that's something he's definitely looking at for the Magic, because offensively they don't really have a go to weapon, so to speak. Tobias Harris is kind of being forced to being that guy, but they definitely want Oladipo to be that guy, and I think this season is going to definitely be the one where we maybe see him kind of take the jump, because he's already a couple of seasons in, but it's kind of looking like this is the year where he maybe becomes more of the player that we can expect for the rest of his career.
I would agree with that completely. Now, Benyam, who's your favorite player on this team?
I'm a big James Harden guy. I really, really like James Harden's game. And I'm very much in the minority in that I enjoy watching James Harden. I remember I put this out on Twitter during the playoffs last season when it came back to the MVP race, and who I guess why people weren't necessarily giving James Harden the same love. And most people were saying that it was because of the aesthetics. But when you watch a guy like James Harden, he's a very intricate, very precise player. I love the step backs and all the fun stuff, but also just getting to the line and getting two free throws and making two free throws. It's boring, but I like the method and how he gets there and sizing up the defender. Yeah, it slows things down a little bit and the game isn't as pretty. That's going to throw the other team off, and I'm all for it. I like the way he goes about things, because he does a little bit of everything, but he's still, I guess, when he gets going, he's probably one of the most entertaining players to watch. When he heats up and starts making buck play that can get you as...
I think we've lost Benyam for a little bit here. He'll come back on. This is Australia's poor internet connection at its very best.
Thank you, NBN.
Yeah, exactly. We see these ads over here on TV all the time, and people obviously in the States wouldn't see them, but, you know, about our internet connection, how it's ranked lower than Romania, I think, is the country they use on the TV here, to say that how bad our internet coverage is, that it's actually worse than Romania in terms of the speeds and the reliability of our internet. So yeah, I apologize for the dropouts. Considering me and Benyam are living about 10 kilometers away from each other, we still can't get a good connection yet. From the other side of the world, I can get crystal clear, no breakup. So that says a lot for our internet coverage over here.
You do you, Romania.
All right, I agree with you. Harden is my favorite player on this team, and sometimes it's not pretty watching it, but you have to respect the guy that, look, you can only do what the game allows you to do, and it's within the rules, and it is efficient to do that within the rules, and he does it better than anybody else, and he is just doing what he needs to do to score and to help his team win. He's not doing it because he likes getting bumped every time he goes into the lane. He's not doing it because, you know, he loves watching a game with lots of free throws. He's doing it because he knows it's efficient, and he knows it's the best way that he's going to be able to score points, throw the other team off what they're doing, get their opposition players into foul trouble, and it's very smart. And that's, you know, it might not be pretty always, but it's very smart. So I'm with you with Harden. How about all time? Who is your favorite Houston Rocket player of all time?
This one's, I think you can't go past the Hakeem Olajuwon. I mean, I think this has to be everyone's favorite Rocket, right?
Yep, absolutely.
He's the iconic Houston Rocket, but I'd say my second favorite Houston Rocket, I'm going to go with Rafer Alston.
Okay.
I'm skip to my Lou guy.
That's fair enough. Rafer Alston had a very, very interesting career with the Rockets and basically in the NBA in general. But his I was looking through all the Houston players, and he's a name that definitely stood out when I was. Hakeem's my favorite, of course. But of the other names that were there, Alston definitely stood out from me. Like, he only played 3 seasons in Houston, but you remember him there. He got big minutes. He had a pretty good role on this team, and he was quite useful. He didn't score a huge amount, hit a couple of threes a game, you know, 5-6 assists. A real handy guy out there. Defensive presence as well, getting some steals. But Elijah Wan's the guy who's not only, you know, one of Houston's greatest, or he is Houston's greatest ever player, one of the NBA's greatest ever players. And if we look at his stats from a fantasy point of view, they're absolutely insane. We're talking about 10 years straight as a top 5 player. He had, this is goes from 88 to 89. No, you know what? Let's start from his second season, 85 to 86. His block numbers. He went 3.4, 3.4, 2.7, 3.4, 4.6, 4, 4.3, 4.2, 3.7. That's like 9 seasons of the lowest total being 2.7 and every other year being at least 3.4 in terms of his block numbers. In 4 of those seasons straight, he averaged over 2 steals a game, plus at least 12 rebounds a game, plus at least 21 points a game. So we're talking, at a minimum, 21, 12, 2 steals, 2.5 blocks.
He's basically the ludicrous. Ideal fantasy player.
Yeah, he didn't hit threes.
Yeah, that's the one downside. Maybe that's what Anthony Davis has it over Hakeem. But there's not many other guys, I guess, right now that you could, you know, definitely guarantee that kind of output from.
Well, nobody's getting 4 blocks a game. Like, Anthony Davis was close to 3 blocks a game. Nobody's getting, like, he didn't just get 4 blocks a game. He got 4.6 blocks a game. Yeah, 4.3. The only guy that, you know, I've been looking back at these past stats, Mark Eaton had a season where he got like 4.9 blocks a game back in like 84 or something like that. But these numbers, you know, 2 steals and 4.6 blocks, it's craziness. Like, you have that on a fantasy team, 4.6 blocks, it accounts, it's basically venue to win a fantasy league. If you get 1 block a game from your entire team, you're going to be pretty set to win that category. If he's getting you 4.6, you're going to have 4 guys get 0, and you're still coming out ahead. Almost in the block category, and it's just, yeah, it's insanity. Looking back on these numbers, if you ever, and I've mentioned this before, rotomonster.com is a great website for looking at these guys' old stats and fantasy rankings. Larry Bird was a crazy one to look at. Obviously, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, some of the numbers they put up were just crazy. And if you had translated it to today's game, it doesn't make sense to see all these guys doing it at the same time. When we look at Harden, he had 27, 6, and 7. God, that's fantastic, but Bird was going 24, 10, and 7 as well, and 2 steals, and just crazy numbers. And look, I watched a little bit of basketball back then, but not to the degree that I did now. And imagine being back then and watching these numbers come through. Just imagine someone having a quadruple-double now. It's so unlikely to happen.
It's funny because I guess back then, stats weren't measured the way that we sort of completely analyze things now from that sort of full analytics and that 360-degree view that we have now of not only the box score, but then also, you know, your ratings and your efficiencies and that kind of thing. So when you go back and look at some of these guys, it's absolutely insane that, as you said, not that one or two of them, like all of these guys were doing it. Like, you're getting 6, 7, 8 guys at the same time, you know, stuffing the stat sheet and doing it very efficiently. So it's fun to go back and look at stats. They're my two favorite historical things to do. Go back and look at old stats and old drafts. They're my probably my number one, actually.
Old drafts is fantastic because all you do, you're going back and looking at it, you go, geez, they picked this guy ahead of this guy, and it gets, and we're just looking at, oh, remember this, remember Chris Mim, when you look at these names, and just names that come out, and you go, remember this guy. And sometimes you forget when guys were drafted and which guys they were drafted with. You know, I can't believe this guy was drafted at the same time as this player. Especially like with the international guys who then go and sit overseas for a couple of years. And, you know, I didn't know that he was drafted in the same year as this guy. It's very basketball nerd, but it's pretty fun to do.
Yeah, I love it because it's just a completely redundant exercise. So,
oh yeah, it doesn't change anything.
No, it leads you down the rabbit hole of, well, if they drafted that guy, then they wouldn't have got that guy. And then you start going into a butterfly effect zone where we start recreating completely fictional situations. But it is interesting when you look at, I guess going back to what we're talking about with analytics, when you apply them to, you know, bygone eras and just to try and contextualize how, I guess, insane some of these guys were, especially back to Hakeem. He's probably one of the best guys to do that with.
Yeah, Hakeem's numbers were crazy. But yeah, even in the season where Hakeem had those 4.6 blocks and two steals, he was still the fifth-ranked fantasy guy. There were still four other guys that were better than him from a fantasy point of view. Jordan, Magic. And then even Patrick Ewing had a 29-11 with four blocks a game from Patrick Ewing. That's crazy. Like, Patrick Ewing had four blocks a game. I could talk about this.
That's the kind of, I guess, goal you'd want from someone like a DeMarcus Cousins. Like, you can put up 30 and 10. Like, that's not unreasonable. But then to throw in four blocks as well and then do that every single night, it's one on top of the other.
Oh, it's, yeah, these numbers, I could do this. I probably am going to do this all night, but you can just look at this stuff for so long. But Benjamin, I better let you go. It's been great having you on the show. Let's remind everybody where they can find your podcast and where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio as well and a few other places. It's the Believe the Hype NBA podcast. And on Twitter, you can catch me at Benyam Kadane. And on Facebook as well, you can catch the Believe the Hype NBA podcast. We've got all our stuff out there on Facebook as well and BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. But it's been a whole lot of fun. It's been great. Great. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. Everybody follow Benyam. Listen to his podcast with Tom Reed. It is a fantastic show. They get a lot of good guests on, and they talk a lot of great basketball stuff. So head across and check out that podcast. And also, if you are listening to this podcast, obviously, but subscribe to this one on iTunes as well. Leave a review for both of us. Head across. Follow us all on social media, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere, Instagram, anywhere else you can find our stuff. You know where the links are on the website. There's going to be some more podcasts coming very, very soon this week. Going to have the Suns, the Jazz, but remember now the Nuggets, the Spurs, and the Pacers all coming in the next couple of days. So keep your ears out for those ones. Benjamin, thanks again. It's been great having you here.
Always a pleasure, mate. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.